Hello, welcome to the Inside Sports Nutrition Podcast. My name is Bob Sibahar with my co-host, Dina Griffin. We are super excited to be bringing you episode 15, where Dina and I sit down and discuss all things related to nutrient timing, specifically during training. You will definitely not want to miss this episode, no matter what sport, what activity, what gender you are. It is a very, very informative episode. Dina and I are going to be discussing the Fab Five as we relate it to nutrition and exercise, and that is fluids, electrolytes, carbohydrates, protein, and fat. And some of the things we'll be talking about in this episode is how the type of sport and duration and intensity affect fluid and fueling choices. Is thirst the best signal for when you should drink? How to better figure out how much to drink during training and why hydration is so important. And then the nuances around how many carbohydrates we should take per hour and what types of carbohydrate and where should they come from. So stay tuned for this great episode. You're going to learn a ton. We definitely appreciate you tuning in. Thank you.
Welcome to the Inside Sports Nutrition Podcast. Thanks for joining us today. We're happy, as always, to have you with us. I'm Dina Griffin, co-host, and the other host, Bob Sibahar, joining me. How are you doing today, Bob?
Wonderful, Dina. How about yourself?
Good. You know, today we're doing a little continuation of our previous podcast on nutrient timing. Last episode, we talked about fueling and hydration considerations for before our training and practice. And today we're going to continue and move along the timeline and look at some things for during our training, how to fuel and hydrate. You know, Bob, as I was thinking about this recording in our episode today, I was thinking, you know, we could just tell our listeners something like 150 to 300 calories per hour, you know, and it just have a gel every 15 minutes and drink to thirst and we can be done. So you want to
sign
off?
I mean, absolutely. I think that just about covers it. Have a few sips of water. I mean, yeah, like you said, drink to thirst. Sure.
Bye. Well, no, I'm just kidding.
Things have progressed over the years, haven't they?
Yeah. And it would be quite a disservice. I mean, but the thing is, Bob, as you know, those recommendations still are out there, very general. And I know we have to start somewhere as athletes, right? Like, okay, what's the range? What am I looking at? But it really can enhance what we're looking to do and accomplish with our training and our athletic pursuits if we pay way more attention to what we're doing during.
Absolutely.
Which may be a Ms. Obvious statement why we're bringing this to light.
Yeah. And I, you know, I think a lot of athletes think, at least this is my perception when they come to me and ask me, you know, what should I eat during training, during competition, during, I think a lot of times when we think nutrient timing, you and I think before, during, and after. When athletes think nutrient timing, it's more, what do I do during? Right. Mm-hmm. So I think that is, we're going to really, you know, break it down a little bit more. Obviously we had our nutrient timing overview episode, which was fantastic with all the different questions that you have to really ask yourself in terms of what's going on. But now, even though we're not going to be able to give specific individual examples, we will be breaking down the Fab Five, which we refer to as fluid, carbohydrate, protein, fat, and electrolytes today, to give a little bit, to help the listener, to help you guys and gals get a little bit closer in devising your nutrient timing during program.
Yes. And so for those of you who might have cheated and you skipped the last episode talking about the pre-training window, I would just, you know, give a, you know, advocate for not cheating and listening to that, because a lot of what you may do or consider during your training will depend on what you've done beforehand.
100%, especially during and after, which we'll focus on another episode, but it really kind of does the pre-training nutrition and hydration. It really sets up what you're going to do during a session.
Yes, Bob. So, okay, we'll assume that all our listeners are following the rules. Just kidding, that they listen to the pre-training, but that's okay if you didn't, because you may then decide how important that is as we get into this discussion.
Right.
Considerations for during. And as you pointed out or alluded to, it's impossible to address every single scenario, but these are considerations that we find most important when we're planning and strategizing for fluids and electrolytes and the other chewable calories or drinkable calories that we need during training.
Yeah.
You know, one of the big things that comes to light over and over again is GI distress and that role of how it affects our nutrition and fluid planning. So something to think about here.
Yeah, that monster will always come up in a good handful of athletes for sure. And those are the athletes right now that are listening that are shaking their heads like, yeah, I really hope they talk about that a little bit more.
Should we just dive in, Bob, to our Fab Five, or should we
let's
get
dive
some
in.
More disclaimers around?
You know, I think the biggest things just to remember, listeners, this very much so is individual based, sport based, gender based. So we do, like, if you're a team sport athlete, if you play soccer, basketball, if you're a gymnast versus a triathlete or an ultra runner, a swimmer, right? The nutrient timing during will be a little bit different. There are some good considerations that are, like, I would say general considerations that can kind of go across a lot of different sports, but they will, like, the individuality will need to definitely be teased out a little bit more. So let's keep that in mind as we're having our discussion here.
Yeah, agreed. Well, Bob, you know, with the Fab Five that we've referenced before, I think maybe for this purpose, we'll combine two of them here with looking at fluids that we would drink during and combine some of this discussion with the electrolytes that may be in our fluid. So if we're looking at trying to hydrate during a training session, we absolutely need to think about what it is we've done beforehand to hydrate for the session, which will come into play with, like, what time are we actually doing our training? What's the weather like? You know, in those considerations.
Absolutely. So some indoors, of that outdoors.
Yeah. Some of that may be obvious, but I think bringing back into this discussion, thinking about the session duration is really important to consider. Do you want to remind people how we kind of break those time durations, the segments up?
Yeah, I think it's pretty easy. And this is kind of, you know, gleaned from research too. We're really talking about if it's under 60 minutes or over 60 minutes. I think that's really the tipping point when we look at fluids and electrolytes.
And so can we just say drink to thirst, or should we say drink before you're thirsty?
Yeah, it's a good question, because back in the days, Dina, remember, I said every episode, I'm going to include that now. Back in the days, we were taught based on research, that we should trust our thirst mechanism. We should only drink according to thirst. And what the researchers were finding, and certainly we were in the field with athletes, was that a lot of athletes were becoming so dehydrated because they were behind the eight ball, right? So this whole drink to thirst mechanism, I do support it throughout the day, although so many things interrupt that. But during exercise, I think we need to be a little bit more methodical, because I see a lot more athletes really harm their performance because they're not. And let's take this as an example. Depending on the sport you're doing, if you're indoors and it's climate controlled, your thirst mechanism might be fooled, right? You may actually, even though you're sweating and you're working hard, you just might not be as thirsty. Whereas maybe you're riding your bike outside and the wind is coming in your face and it's making your mouth extremely dry, right? You're going to have that thirst mechanism triggered a lot quicker than you would indoors in a climate controlled. So I'm more of a proponent of, I don't want to get nitpicky and say you have to follow these fluid ounces per minute or whatever it is, but I do want to highlight that how important it is to have fluid guidelines, ounces, milliliters, depending on where you live in the world, in terms of having it more frequent than waiting until, you know, if we say 20 ounces an hour, you know, I have had athletes at that hour mark and maybe they're, you know, 2 or 3 hours session that they're doing, at that hour mark, they're trying to chug 20 ounces of water, and that's not going to cut it either. Right.
Yeah. I think for the most part, exactly, is looking at ranges.
Yes.
And instead of trying to hit some precise amount of fluid that you need to drink per interval of time, although that can be helpful for some of us who are just trying to get in the mode of teaching the brain, getting in the habit of drinking, getting ready for race day or competition. But really being mindful and careful to hit exact amounts of fluid or exact amounts of electrolytes per interval of time. It's, I think, really important, Bob, and you can add on here, is, instead having this range to work within, knowing that there will be all of these variables that come into the picture, and not at the same time, we don't want to neglect or override the signals that we get from our body,
right?
Whether that's a thirst sensation or something else, right? We need to honor that and bring it in. However, having just said that, we also sometimes don't get the signals. Mm-hmm. And so that's the benefit of having a range to aim for or keep in mind.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I think it also depends on the athlete, right? So if we're talking about an athlete that trains outdoors and they're carrying their fluids, right? That's going to be a different consideration than if they're indoors and they have fluid available to them, readily available to them, or even like if it's a team sport athlete, younger athlete that has practices and the coach only gives, you know, in a 2-hour, 3-hour session, they only give one water break, quote unquote, water break, or two water breaks, right? There's a lot of things that we can plan, but sometimes the plan cannot actually be implemented as is. So we do have to do our best by giving those ranges and allowing the athlete a little bit of wiggle room depending on their situation.
Yeah. So do you think, I guess back to the duration that we're looking at and bringing in fluids for this, like hour or less, I think this is where we could say, you know, probably not necessary to force any fluids during, or you don't have to, but definitely looking at the pre-window would be essential, instead of trying to, you know, consume fluids during an hour. It's kind of an optional scenario.
Yeah, I think it's spot on. I think you see a lot of people who do training indoors, even under an hour. And again, it's a little warmer, it's a little more humid, you know, their thirst mechanism is triggered a little bit more because of those conditions. You know, the message is, you know, under an hour, drink according to what your body is telling you. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
And if it's easy to drink, like the indoor, then go for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and consider this too, right? If you do a good job in the pre-hydration and during training hydration, you're going to actually come out of the training session better hydrated. So that post-workout nutrition, which we'll talk about in a future episode, will actually become easier also.
Yep. And then, you know, for our hour longer, looking at fluid consumption during and whether or not we need electrolytes. I know we've got some episodes focused on electrolytes and so forth, but let's talk a little bit more for those longer sessions. And, you know, just not to be a broken record, but of course we have to think about what it is we're doing and the environmental conditions. But I would say one thing to think about that you hinted at, Bob, is, okay, should I just take this big bolus or this big volume of fluid in infrequent intervals, like at the top of the hour, I'll do a big chug of the bottle versus trickling in or kind of, you know, nursing the bottle over the course of our session?
Yeah, I think, again, logistics aside, because again, there are certain times and just challenges we have if we're cycling, grabbing a bottle, especially like mountain biking, if we're, you know, constrained to the whatever we can carry on us, right? Or aid stations, even water stations. So I think, you know, those aside, I do believe on a little more frequency. One, because it I don't want to say keeps you hydrated longer, but it's, you're not going to have all that fluid rushing down throughout through your stomach at one time, which can actually cause distension, cause bloated feeling, and maybe even trigger GI distress just because of volume alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The sip approach, I suppose, or more frequent gulps.
And I believe, like, if we're talking about electrolytes here, I think we almost always need electrolytes during a session that's longer than 60 minutes. Mm-hmm. However, when I said that, everyone's perking up now. They're like, oh, what supplement is he going to say? Right.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing, as we're also introducing different nutrients, carbohydrates specifically, we're going to usually, not always, but usually have some, at least sodium in these type of foods or carbohydrate sources. So a lot of times we don't necessarily have to focus on supplemental electrolytes if we are getting through food, if, or however, right, we have super salty sweaters, don't we, Dina?
I feel like that could have been translated to some algebraic formula.
Yes.
Or big story, you know, like in fifth grade or whatever, you get this big if, then, and then this and that.
Absolutely.
That's the answer. But it's so conditional. So yeah, our salty sweaters or our heavy sweaters, this is where we get to be more clever, or we have to be more clever with planning our fluids, maybe having a bit more of a target. So if you, for example, you know, an average sweat rate may be around, you know, a liter mm-hmm. per hour, or, you know, maybe it's a little bit less than that actually, mm-hmm. let's say, and we could think in pounds or liters or ounces.
Yep.
So it might be, you know, I guess you have to figure that out for yourself, but based on some research, it was around a liter per hour.
Mm-hmm.
But if you find and you do your own sweat rate measurements throughout a season and you find, geez, I sweat a liter and a half in the climate in which I train, the intensity I train, then our fluid considerations may be a bit more aggressive than someone who isn't sweating as heavily, or looking again at the other variables that in fact impact sweat rate.
Absolutely. And I think you hit on something that's really important for the listeners to understand is, one, how do you measure your sweat rate? You just, you know, ideal world is you step on a scale nude before a session, weigh yourself again nude after the session, and you can calculate the amount of fluid that you lost. And that's, you know, that's how we figure out sweat rate. But another thing to consider, and I know it changes for me significantly, is seasonal, right? I mean, wintertime versus summertime specifically. I mean, my sweat rate goes up significantly during the summer, and I have to readjust my during nutrition plan, specifically hydration and electrolytes.
Yes. And then for the women athletes listening too, thinking across the menstrual cycle, does your sweat rate change significantly from low to high hormone phase? Or if we're in postmenopause, you know, maybe we're more sensitive to heat. We may slow down, or, you know, we may feel more thirst, or perhaps just due to aging, our thirst sensation has been suppressed in a way. So these are also considerations as we, you know, layer in all the variables here in terms of planning fluids or thinking about what we need.
Yeah. And certainly, you know, geographically too, where you are in the world. I mean, I remember when I was in Florida for a short time trying to just run during, you know, that heat and humidity. I mean, Dina, I would lose such a copious amount of fluid. It wasn't even funny compared to my Colorado fluid loss. So it does, you kind of need to, I talk to athletes all the time, like where will you be competing, right? If it's an outdoor event, where in the country or the world versus where you're training, because we might have to adjust those a little bit. And that's why, you know, a lot of athletes will do in, like if they live in, you know, kind of maybe high and dry or a little less humid and warmer conditions, but they may compete in warmer and humid conditions. They'll actually train indoors, maybe a space heater, a humidifier in the room, right? Just to try to simulate that. But that's good data to get in terms of sweat rate measurement also.
Yeah, Bob. Okay. So if we had to summarize a range for fluid intake, mm-hmm. I think a lot of us think per hour, you mm-hmm. know, what is this range?
Yep.
Just for the general masses, regardless, you know, again, you have to overlay or apply your sweat rate and all those considerations, but per hour, I mean, the top end, I've seen maybe just a touch over a liter per hour mm-hmm. or 33. I think I've seen a couple of my athletes be able to do about 38 ounces per hour, but they've had to work hard to train
absolutely.
To do that, to tolerate that, absorb the fluids. And then on the low end for my maybe, you know, lower intensity, low sweat rate people, mm-hmm. it might be, you know, 10 to 12 ounces or maybe 400 mils per hour. Mm-hmm. What's the range you've seen, Bob, with your scope of athletes?
Yeah, your range is very similar to mine. So I usually see about 12 to 36 ounces an hour. Okay. And the more is usually for the athletes like cyclists who they don't have too much jostling in the mm-hmm. stomach and they can actually have fluid available. And the lower end is certainly more like our team sport athletes, our runners who sometimes just cannot consume a lot due to that sport itself.
Yeah. I think we should add a couple words here real quick about the importance of hydration, just so that, you know, because we're talking about what to do, things to think about, but the reason to pay attention to hydration. I mean, for one, if we are out there for quite a while, and we're taking in other calories, we want to, you know, maintain a hydration status that's adequate to actually help with the digestion, absorption of the other calories that we're consuming.
Right.
Otherwise, the GI monster may rear its head more frequently.
Absolutely. Well, and you see a lot of these sport nutrition products actually recommend taking X amount of ounces of water per whatever sport nutrition product they're using. Like some gels on the market say, you know, take with 4 to 6 ounces of water. And, you know, again, there's a reason behind this stuff, not to just, you know, suck down the gels or eat your bananas or whatever it is.
Right.
Yeah.
And then just thinking of cardiovascular strain, you know, the more dehydrated we become or underhydrated, we're putting a lot more strain on the heart. Mm-hmm. To pump blood, and, you know, then maybe we have some core temperature increase and it's difficult to offload some of that heat stress. We need to think about our kidneys, trying to eliminate, you know, waste products. So geez, hydration, I think we brought it up first, even though a lot of athletes want to think about carbs or sugars per hour, but right. Hydration needs attention and it's a top priority.
Well, and so many athletes, I think, including, you know, myself and probably you also, Dina, we just don't do good at it. I mean, it's just, again, I think we need to shift our priority in our paradigm of thinking, saying it's hydration first. And that's why we're talking about this first, hydration, electrolytes, then it's fueling specifically with calories because of the importance of hydration and dehydration for that matter on performance, but also health markers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then what should we add in here, Bob, the sodium story or the electrolyte? Oh, I know.
That's a moving target, isn't it? Like we know the body needs electrolytes during, it's just a matter of how much, right? And that's the key. And I know you and I are very pro testing, right? So sweat sodium concentration testing and that is offered, obviously. And I think once we have that from an athlete perspective, we can actually really, I guess you could just say prescribe the quantity of electrolytes they need, because doesn't the range, I mean, I know we both have tested this and we've seen a ridiculously large range of how much sodium is in, so the sodium concentration is in an athlete's sweat. I mean, I've seen what probably 300 to 400, you know, all the way at milligrams per liter, all the way up to almost 2000. Like it's such a huge range.
It is a huge range. So I think our point here is we don't want to neglect electrolytes. But I don't think we should be subscribing to the black and white, like you don't ever need extra sodium anywhere, or you always need, you know, this massive amount of sodium or electrolyte. So,
right.
It's going to be this fluid moving target, not to be neglected.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think another thing to mention is we also need to train the body for competition. So if this is training that we're talking about and you are, you know, having a certain amount of fluid and electrolytes per hour, that actually will help you develop your competition fluid and electrolytes prescription, if you will, or plan also. So I think, you know, I think looking at that, you know, a few months before and for athletes practicing this in, you know, during their practice, during their training, so they can start developing a competition day fluid and electrolyte plan.
Yeah. Hydration, electrolytes, it needs some loving.
It does.
Well, Bob, let's get let's move to a few of the other points here in your Fab Five for during. So if we look at carbohydrates, as we've talked about in previous podcasts, you know, the recommendations for fueling for those longer training sessions or practices, let's say over an hour and a half or so, is about 30 grams of carbohydrate per hour, upwards of maybe 90, 100 grams per hour. That's a pretty big range.
Oh, it's huge. This is like the Goldilocks nutrient that I call it, right? It's, I think a lot of athletes try to get too little or they try to get too much. It's never right in the middle, kind of where they need to be, right? And it is, it's a huge range. Like you've got 60 grams swing and that's 240 calories, by the way, right? So now you're talking about this range from 120 calories to 360 calories, right? And it's not just throw a dart against the wall or, oh, you're male, you need this, you're female, you need this. Oh, I ride my bike, I need this much versus I'm a basketball player, so I need this much. Like it is a little bit of a moving target. And obviously you and I like to get a little more methodical and do metabolic efficiency testing because we actually, this is one of the data points that we get is how much based on what your body is burning or oxidizing, we can actually determine how much you need to consume during training and during competition. So let's just call out the testing really quick. Aside from that, where do we begin, right? I mean, holy moly.
I know, right? So obviously we have to think about how long are we out there? What's the intensity? What is our individual gut tolerance or what do we think it is right now? Because maybe we can change the source of the carbohydrate to work better, or we're looking at the amount, the timing. You know, obviously what mode of sport are we doing? Is a lot of jostling, or we're on maybe a road bike, not a whole lot happening with body up and down, or, you know, impact on the body or the gut. From there, I mean, we can start honing in a little bit more. I think for those athletes who have no idea, maybe they're just getting into a new sport or trying to start anew, I think, you know, sometimes if you don't have the testing data, you could start maybe at the low moderate range of this recommendation, and kind of test it out for yourself and then perhaps work upward or downward to accommodate what your needs are.
Yeah, it's a little bit of experimenting, and but I do support that, Dina. Like I support athletes if they don't have the testing data, you know, for themselves. I do support jumping in on the lower end, and you know, maybe a couple training sessions you don't feel good, you don't feel like you have enough energy. Well, that's good data. Like that's what you log. Yeah. You know, you keep a methodical log of how you're feeling based on that. I don't like starting higher because I don't want anyone to get GI distress. At least you know. Unplanned, right? I want them to start so low and just go up even by 5 or 10 grams each time to see where they're, you know, I believe there's a carbohydrate ceiling that you can absorb during exercise. And I think, unfortunately, everyone is different. And I say, unfortunately, because we can't make that one global, oh, you don't go over this grams of carbohydrate or else. Like we don't have that number because everyone is so different.
Yeah, for sure. So there's that amount consideration and then type of carbohydrate that we're looking at. Are we able to do maybe more whole food or a semi-solid source of carbohydrate? Is that dried fruit, for example, or homemade energy bites that might have a little bit of protein and fat or other liquid nutrition? Even in our episode we did with Dr. Alan Lim of Scratch Labs, where he talked about the differences in carbohydrate molecules or the structure and how that impacts our gut tolerance or our digestion absorption of the fuel we're taking in. So this part is a whole other episode, just looking at type of carbohydrate, Bob.
Oh, yeah.
But do you want to add a couple nuggets from your side?
Well, and there's so much science that's been done and is continuing to be done. I mean, I think, you know, individuals like Alan Lim and with Scratch, I think they're pushing the envelope with technology and carbohydrates, which I think is great. Cause, you know, I think just, you know, years ago, it was found, you know, we have two transporters on the small intestine that can transport glucose and fructose. So all these companies jumped on board and started making their compilations of carbohydrate products that included both glucose and fructose to speed the absorption. And that's how sometimes we can actually deliver more carbohydrates to the body, because we're working on these two mechanisms of absorption, essentially, in the small intestine. But I think nowadays, like, this is really cool to be part of this right now, I think, for you and I, because we've seen just the, you know, glucose, we've seen the fructose, we've seen the combination of those, we've seen maltodextrin, and now we're seeing a lot more technology being employed. You know, we've got the all these different types of starches and carbohydrates and products, and I think it's exciting. It's also very confusing, unfortunately, for our athletes.
Yeah, right. The question is, should I be teaching my body to take as much carbohydrate as possible, training the gut to take 400 calories of XYZ carb? Is that necessary? Will that enhance my performance? Is a question that we have to apply.
Yeah. And that kind of comes into the whole metabolic efficiency, you know, training story also, like which really depends on the event. Let's just get very particular in that. Like, if you're an ultra runner, ultra cyclist, stage racer, where you're really focusing on long duration, lower to moderate intensities, where it may make sense to really maximize your fat adaptation, your metabolic efficiency, you're burning more fat at those intensities, it may make sense to really not train your body to be able to ingest a lot of carbohydrates, right? But it is kind of intensity and duration dependent. Whereas if you're that athlete who is very explosive or short distance, short course, and you need a lot of power in that more anaerobic energy system, it may make sense to also train your body to absorb more carbohydrate per hour. So I do want to delineate that, because it kind of drives me crazy in the, you know, popular media, everyone kind of getting on the bandwagon saying, oh no, you just need to feed, you know, 100 grams of carbs per hour, so your stomach and your digestive system gets used to that. Well, I don't have a problem with that. I have a problem with, let's put it in context first, and what type of athlete and who are they? What are, even from a health perspective, like, should they even be consuming that much sugar, just, you know, not performance wise, but also from a health and insulin resistance and, you know, maybe a pre-diabetic state.
Right.
Yeah.
And well, since we're talking about amount, a quick word for the female athletes paying attention, the importance of tracking menstrual cycles, or if you're in perimenopause, doing the best you can, but seeing for yourself, if you put a little bit more carbohydrate within your longer sessions, within your harder sessions, a little bit, this may be 5 or 10 extra grams, maybe it could be different. Does that support you better in your higher hormone phase? Perhaps there's some hints of that coming out, and some advocates of higher intake of carbohydrate. Again, though, I won't say it depends, but it does depend on the individual athlete.
It really does.
But then what about timing of intake of carbohydrate within, you know, a practice or a training session, Bob?
In terms of when to consume it?
Yeah. How often should we be taking the, let's say, 50 grams of carb per hour? Yeah. Is that on the hour? Are we trickling that in?
I like the trickle effect still. I mean, I know sometimes it's a pain in the butt. I mean, I've been there doing that myself too. And you're carrying stuff, or if you're an outdoor athlete, and, or you've got to stop a practice and go grab some, like, I get it. It is a little bit more of a pain, but the last thing you want is to throw this huge amount of sugar, of carbohydrate in your body all at once. And then you have a gut bomb, right? It's just waiting to go off, and it may not go off if you do have an iron gut, but I do believe that's a little bit more suspect to having GI distress rather than playing it safe. So I do like the trickle down effect. I usually split it into twice an hour if possible, especially if we're talking about 50 grams. I think, you know, if you do like 20 grams, 30 grams, you could probably get away all at once, right? Yeah. For sure. But yeah. I think once you hit over 30, which is, you know, that's kind of pushing the limits a little bit for some athletes.
And then thinking about, you know, what is it I'm going to do on race day or competition day? I feel there's never, like, it's never too early to start practicing.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I suppose if we're 4 years out or 1 year out, it's probably too soon, but, you know, just the point there, just being starting to really explore practice, note the timing, type, amount that is working best at your goal intensity that you intend for your race, right? So that's pretty fundamental to this whole piece. What are we working towards, let alone just fueling that particular session?
Yeah. And, you know, for team sport athletes, I usually talk to them, like, preseason becomes very important for doing this and training your body and seeing what's going to work and not work for competition. For endurance athletes, I usually like to start about 3 to 4 months before their first competition, because it gives us a little bit of time, like some wiggle room, right? If something isn't going right, we maneuver, we respond to that. If something is going right, fantastic. They just keep it. But I have found it takes at least a good month and a half to roll through different interventions, essentially for carbohydrates specifically during training. So I think the more time, the better, for sure.
Okay. Well, protein and fat, quick few minutes here. Do we need these?
Boy, that's like the $64,000 question, isn't it? I do believe that we need to define what training session, right? So if it is more of a practice, endurance, that type of thing, not strength, not in the weight room. So let's dictate that. So if it's strength or not strength, basically, if it's strength, you know, most strength sessions do not last longer than an hour, right? So like you get some CrossFit and stuff like that, and you're talking hour 15, maybe. But then if you look at that, like you've got warm up and cool down. So the actual session itself is 30 to 45 minutes sometimes. So I don't think there's good reason to include protein during a shorter duration practice or training event. However, of course, as we mentioned before, it kind of depends on what you did in the pre-training mode, right? If you're going into this fasted, or if you just didn't get to eat for a specific reason, right? There could be some consideration there. Shifting into the non-strength or the endurance, oh my gosh. I mean, it's all over the place, isn't it, Dina? Because now we're talking about some athletes training for 4 hours, 6 hours. I mean, maybe even 16 to 20 hours in training sessions, like not competitions, but that actually happens for a lot of these ultra athletes.
Right. So I would see value, you know, some advantages of taking in little bits of protein along mm-hmm. those longer, you know, endurance focused sessions. Absolutely. Maybe it's for satiety. You know, I'm just getting hungry 6 hours in and I want mm-hmm. a little bit more sustenance, just fill the tummy a little bit more, or thinking along the lines of recovery or just mitigating some of the muscle damage occurring in those longer sessions. So I think bits of protein and maybe we can table, you know, whether or not to do branched chain amino acids or, mm-hmm. you know, the broken down proteins, we can table that for a future episode. I think disadvantage or maybe a reason not to is just if it's going to get in the way of needing or wanting more carbohydrate or displacing, you know, like carbohydrate might be the preferred energy source we want to provide. So are we putting in too much protein that's going to get in the way, so to speak,
right?
Or just slowing down, you know, the digestion process, and shoot, now we're getting a little bit of a lull energy wise. Right.
Yeah. And I think this is probably for a specific case of athletes. And we're talking really the endurance athletes here, aren't we? For the longer endurance. I mean, we've probably heard similar things. You know, I mean, I've heard in the even Ironman and above world, the ultra world, you know, athletes eating hard boiled eggs and slices of pizza and burgers. And you're like, you know, my first question is, how do you digest, like, how do you keep moving and handle that in your stomach? Right. And again, iron guts, some athletes have them, but I agree to the point is, like, if you're going to have a slice of pizza, which is, you know, relative, I mean, depends on the pizza, of course, but relatively, you know, higher in fat, higher in protein because of the cheese, maybe lower in carb, like, or even hard boiled eggs or a burger, like, are you getting enough carbohydrates though to support that? Of course, we also need to put in context what the relative intensity is. Like, if they are walking or very low intensity running or movement, then okay, maybe we can get by with that. But I mean, I've been part of stage races and with athletes and even myself and ultras where, you know, protein early on usually comes back to bite you later in terms of digestive distress. So we really need to kind of work on the timing of that. And I think that's why we're really looking at, if we're going to include protein, maybe it's the 3, 4, 5 hour mark and beyond, right? Yeah. It's definitely not the shorter endurance, if you will.
Okay. Yeah. Got it, Bob. I think that's good. And I think with fat, it's much less in the story, although it could come into play in those scenarios where it is a long, long ultra event, you know,
right,
including some fat as part of a mixed meal, but we don't have to be consuming solely fat.
No, not at all. I think it is very important in the ultra world. But for most athletes, you know, it's, they shouldn't even consider it. I mean, honestly, maybe, you know, maybe if you're having some peanut butter crackers or peanut butter and jelly sandwich, yeah, you're going to get a little bit, but that the plan is not to, to specifically feed fat. It just happens to be in that nut butter or something. Okay. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But I think for most athletes, don't really focus on planning fat. It's going to be that very few percentage of athletes that are doing the ultra stuff that do need to be paying particular attention to fat, just like you said, for the calories, right? They're out there for however long, even days and days and days, where we need to just get calories in.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Bob, there's a lot to, you know, everything that we've been talking about. We could go in, you know, a couple more hours, but
absolutely,
I think this was more detail from the overview podcast, getting into the nitty gritty, and then we're going to get nitty gritty gritty in yes. more of our episodes. So athletes, listeners, supporters out there, you know, take notes, make questions, send us your concerns, send us your questions, hello@insidesportsnutrition.com. And we will be sure to, you know, delve into all of this much more in our future. For now, we will be signing off. So Bob, I will see you soon. And listeners, thank you so much for tuning in.
Thank you, everyone. Hello, welcome to the Inside Sports Nutrition Podcast. I hope you have enjoyed this episode 15, where Dina and I sat down and discussed all things related to what to eat and what to drink during training. Hope you left with some golden nuggets, and we are excited for you to have listened to that. Now, next week, stay tuned for a super, super awesome episode. Dina and I sit down and chat with one of my most favorite people in the whole wide world. He is a professional triathlete. I have known him for, boy, probably 15, 16, 17 years. We go way back into the US Olympic Committee days when he was just starting his professional triathlete career. So Dean and I sit down and chat with the one and only TO, Tim O'Donnell, professional triathlete. He is so well decorated and just such an inspirational person and just an overall great guy. So Dean and I sit down, talk all about nutrition, training, what's up in his life, what he's doing this year, and you're going to definitely get some great information from that episode. So stay tuned for that. If you do have a sport nutrition question that you would like Dina and I to answer on a future episode, shoot us an email, hello@insidesportsnutrition.com. We are more than happy to address that and answer that question on a future episode. If you would do us a tremendous favor and help us support our podcast, that would be fantastic. Help us support, help us promote it. If you're finding that the information that we are providing and sharing is useful in your quest to improve your health and performance, we would love for you to visit your local podcast platform. Give us a 5-star rating, a great review. It really helps kind of spread the word and helps us grow and share our content with other listeners around the world. We would appreciate it. And for more information about Dina and I and what we provide in terms of our nutrition and testing services, you can go visit our website. So you can reach me at energyperformance.com. That is energyperformance.com. And you can catch Dina at nutritionmechanic.com. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the host and the guest involved and do not represent a replacement for medical consultation with your doctor. The information and opinions provided here are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease or medical condition. This podcast is for information, education, and entertainment purposes only.